I like to watch the bonus features on a DVD. I like to see the behind-the-scenes footage, especially if it's some science fiction movie. I like to see how they put everything together and all the things that go into making a movie. I want to invite you this morning to come backstage with me to see things unfold from a very unique perspective. Not for the purposes of our entertainment, but so that we will see the activity and who it is who's working behind the curtain, who's pulling the strings and turning the lights, that we may have a better appreciation of how to defeat our enemy as he wages war on the soldiers of Christ. To do that, I want to ask you to turn to the book of Job, chapter 1, where we will see things from a point of view that we're not certain Job ever got to see. But in Job chapter 1, beginning at verse 1, we find these words recorded. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless, upright, fearing God and turning away from evil. And 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. His possessions also were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, very many servants. And that man was the greatest of all the men of the East. And his sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day. And they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And it came about when the days of feasting had completed their cycle that Job would send and consecrate them, rising up early in the morning and offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "Perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did continually. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." Then Satan answered the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Hast thou not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But put forth thy hand now and touch all that he has. He will surely curse thee to thy face." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him." So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. Now it happened on the day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, that a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans attacked and took them. They also slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed 3 bands and made a raid on the camels and took them and slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the 4 corners of the house. And it fell on the young people, and they died. And I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head. And he fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. The book of Job certainly stands as a testimony of how to hold on to your faith in the midst of terrible circumstances. When people speak about Job today, they still speak of him in terms of the patience of Job. And it certainly is a testimony of holding on to the Lord and having faith that the Lord will restore all things in the end. And certainly James puts those two things together in James 5 and verse 11 when he said, "You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings." But I want you to think about the story of Job this morning, another character from the Old Testament, to see our enemy like we've not seen him before, to have a better appreciation of who's working behind the scenes so that we will be better able to defend him. I want you to see the devil unveiled. Is it not so that we are a people who are at war? We are in the army of the living God, and we are waging war against the forces of evil. And if it is possible that man-made enemies who fight against our country can amass for themselves weapons of mass destruction, can you imagine what the devil has at his disposal as he wages war against the army of Christ? We must be an army who are prepared, who know who we're fighting, who know the outcome of the Lord's dealings. I want you to consider with me four things we learn about the devil unveiled as we see him working behind the scenes. Number one, we learn that the devil is near. The devil, first of all, is near. There came a day when it said the sons of God presented themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And did you notice the question that the Lord asked the devil in verse 6? "Where have you come from?" To which the devil said in verse 7, "From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it." Sometimes we have this picture of the devil that he is very far away. And the cartoons even paint the picture of him ruling over the realm of hell. Somebody gets sent to hell and fall into this big, huge cauldron, and the devil is there to receive them, and then he gets to decide what their punishment is throughout all eternity. But that's not how the Bible describes the devil or the realm of hell. In fact, Jesus said that hell is a place prepared for the devil and his angels. The book of Revelation says that the devil will be tormented day and night. But for now, he is near. He is roaming about on the earth and walking around on it. Just as Peter described him in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, as a roaring lion. But what is he doing? He's prowling around, seeking someone to devour. I want you to see that when we're privileged to look at this perspective behind the scenes, the first thing we find out about the devil is that he is near. When Jesus wrote to the church at Pergamum in Revelation chapter 2, he said to them, "I know where you dwell, where Satan's throne is." Have you ever felt like the devil had just set up shop right in your house? That nobody else was having any trouble with the devil because it was like he was there with you all the time. The devil is near. I make no plea for the movie The Passion of the Christ. There was a group of us from Southside that went to see that when it was in the theater. And the only thing I'll say about it is the only movie I've ever been to when in the car ride home, nobody said a word. Silence. But one of the things I appreciated about Mel Gibson's view of those last days of Jesus was the way he portrayed the character, the devil, in the movie. It was someone who was just always there in the background, always making their presence known. He was there tempting Jesus in the garden at the last. When Jesus was carrying his cross in the movie, the devil was weaving in and out of the background watching. That's how the Bible describes him. He's prowling. He's lurking. He's looking. He's seeking someone to devour. If the devil was not afraid to slither up to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, if the devil knew where to find the Son of Man, Jesus, in the wilderness to tempt him, do you honestly think he doesn't know where you live? Is there anywhere in our world you can go and say with confidence, well, the devil hasn't been here yet? Think about it. He's in the entertainment industry. He's in politics. He's in the corporate world. He's in the schools. He's in the churches. He's in the homes. Because the devil is near. Don't be fooled into thinking that the devil is not a main character in your life. I want you to know, as you consider the stage of your life, the devil is there. Where do you come from? From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it. The devil is near. I want you to see, secondly, not only do we learn when we see the devil unveiled that he is near, but number two, the devil is aware. He is not just a passive observer, but he is aware of the things that are happening in your life. He's collecting information to be used against you. The Lord asked him in verse 8, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And then the Lord lists four things to recommend about Job: blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil. You know what's interesting about the devil's reaction? The devil didn't say, well, let's see, Job. Now, I can't... Where is he? Is he the one with the white hair? I just can't place him. Can you point him out to me? He knew exactly who Job was. In fact, he used all those things that the Lord had given him as a case against him. Look what he says. Verse 9. "Does Job fear God for nothing? Hast thou not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land." The thought during this time that if a man was blessed in three different ways, that must have meant the favor of God was upon him. If he had a great number of children, if he had a great number of livestock, and if he had a great number of servants, and Job had all three of those. And so the devil's accusation is the only reason that Job is blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil is look at all the stuff you gave him. Of course he's going to do that. He's just paying you back with worship for the blessings you've given him. But take those away and he will curse you to your face. The devil is called the great accuser. And here he accuses Job to God. He's only serving you because of what you've given him. But he'll curse you to your face. You see, Job thought he knew because he was aware. As I told you already today, I'm an early riser. And one morning I was having to get out of the house real early. It was still dark outside. And I was trying to be quiet so as not to wake anybody else up. And I did a pretty good job until I got out into the garage. And it was then that I dropped my keys on the floor. And so I bent down to pick them up. I didn't have to bend very far, but I bent down to pick them up. And when I was raising back up, I hit my head on one of the shelves in the garage. And do you know what I thought first? In fact, I even said it out loud. I didn't know the devil got up this early. But he does, doesn't he? And he is aware. Now, I don't mean to say that the devil is omniscient, that he is all-knowing, as is God. But he is aware because he's looking. He's aware because he's near. And he knows what's happening in your part of the world and in your life. General Douglas MacArthur was once asked about the things necessary to win a war. How can you win and wage a war effectively? And he listed things like a well-conceived battle plan, superior equipment, confidence in your leaders. But do you know what General MacArthur said is the most important thing necessary to win a war? He said, you have to have knowledge of your enemy. You have to know who you're fighting. Well, I want you to know your enemy has knowledge of you. What would the devil observe and conclude about what it would take for you to give up on God? As he's watched you, what would he say would be your breaking point where you would cry uncle? Now with Job, he thought it was his possessions. Take those away and he'll curse God and die. What would Job say is your breaking point? Would it be something like anger? If you just got mad enough, 1,000 women were asked this question. If you could change one thing about your husband, what would you change? The overwhelming response was, I just wish he wouldn't get so mad. I hope that's not the case among God's leaders. But would it be anger? Would it be fear? Would it be discouragement? Would it be worldliness? Would it be laziness? Frustration? What would the devil do to get you to quit the Lord? And may I ask you, what would the Lord recommend about you to the enemy? Remember, he said, have you considered my servant Job? And then he said, blameless, upright, fearing God, turning away from evil. If the Lord was talking about you in a conversation and said your name, what four words would precede your name? What would he say about you? I want you to know the devil is near. And I want you to see the devil is aware. We see him working behind the scenes. The third thing we see about the devil is that he is a warrior. The devil is a warrior. He is not a cartoon character. He's not a Halloween costume of a pitchfork and tail. The devil is a warrior who is involved in a war. And he's leading a host of angels. And he must be respected. Behold, God said in verse 12, all that he has is in your power. All that he has is in your power. Does that not indicate that the devil has more than a pitchfork as a weapon? And with this power, look at what he was able to do and the havoc that he caused in the life of Job. A raid on his livestock, lightning that consumed his sheep, a wind that collapsed the house where his children were. But he wasn't finished yet. Chapter 2 begins, again there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, where have you come from? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from roaming about on the earth and walking around on it. And the Lord said to Satan, Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil, and he still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to ruin him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord and said, Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. However, put forth thy hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, he will curse thee to thy face. So the Lord said to Satan, Behold, he is in your power. Only spare his life. Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a potsherd to scrape himself while he was sitting among the ashes. And his wife said to him, Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Again, we find this phrase, Behold, he is in your power. And did you notice in chapter 2 and verse 7, the next verse says, Then Satan went forth and smote Job. You ever noticed how much blame God gets in a world when things go bad? A world that he created and said, It is good. It is very good. And then he gave it to man to have dominion. Sometimes people like to link their troubles with that of Job and say, Well, me and Job, we know all about trials and tribulations. Who here has suffered like Job suffered and did not blame God or sin with their lips? The power of Satan was after Job. Behold, he is in your power. Because he is a warrior. And his might comes in many forms. He doesn't always engage in open warfare. Paul said that we must put on the armor of God. Why? That you may be able to withstand the schemes of the devil. For he said he can disguise himself as an angel of light. Back when Morgan was much younger, she went through, as most girls do, the princess stage, where she liked to not only watch the movies about the princesses, but she liked to reenact the movies about the princesses. And for a time, her favorite movie was Snow White. And so we would have to play Snow White. She didn't want to be Snow White. She wanted to be the evil stepmother. I had to be Snow White. She would come up and she would say, Do you want a poison apple? But that's not how the mother did it, was it? And neither is that how the devil does it. He has schemes. When was the last time you saw the billboard advertising some beer company with a guy holding the commode and the morning hangover? He doesn't advertise that part of the sin, does he? He has power because he's a warrior involved in a war. But I want you to see this same look behind the scenes gives us hope. Because both times, in chapter 1 and verse 12, and in chapter 2 and verse 6, when God says, Behold, he is in your power, there is another word that is found in both verses, and that is the word only. You see, even our powerful enemy must operate within the boundaries of Almighty God. And first God said, behold, he is in your power only. You can't touch him. That's what caused the devil to come back and say, well, look what you did. You didn't let me touch him, and that's why he hasn't cursed you to your face. So then the Lord said, okay, you can touch him, only spare his life. We find this principle in an illustrated form in Luke chapter 22 and verse 31, when Peter made the observation, Lord, I'm ready to go to prison and to death for you. To which Jesus replied, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat, Peter. But I've prayed for you that your faith may not fail, and you, once you have returned, strengthen your brethren. Luke 22 and verse 31. He said, the devil's after you, Peter. But did you notice he had to ask permission first? The devil has power. But we can trust in Almighty God and His power to deliver us. Keep your finger here, but look to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. And notice what Paul said there. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, that you may be able to endure it. He said God is on your side. He wants you to succeed. Why in the world would God send His Son to be a sacrifice for sin just to trip us up and cause us to sin again? God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able to bear. Do you know what that tells us this morning? That no matter what you're struggling with right now, no matter what you brought with you into the building this morning, God knows you're strong enough to endure it. That's what He promised. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. That's why He said, behold, He is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him. God knows you better than your enemy does. He knows you're able to endure, for with the temptation will provide the way of escape also. He doesn't promise that the way of escape will be the most pleasant option. But He does promise the way of escape. God wants you to win and to defeat the devil. He has given what we need to fight him. Though our enemy is powerful, he must operate within the confines of Almighty God. Trust in God's power to help you defeat your greatest enemy. We see that the devil is a warrior. And then finally, I want you to notice what we learn when we see the devil in this behind-the-scenes footage. We see that he's near and that he's aware and that he's a warrior. But number four, we find that the devil is relentless. The devil is relentless. He will not give up until you do. Verse 1 of chapter 2 begins with the word again. And notice that the devil, when he came before God the second time, and he says to him, have you considered my servant Job? That the devil didn't say, well, I'm just overmatched here. I mean, I thought I could get him to sin, but he's just too strong, and so I'm not going to waste my time on him anymore. No, he had this new approach. He thought that Job had traded the lives of his children for his own good health, but once his health declined, then he would curse God and die. He was relentless. He had nothing to lose. He wouldn't give up. When Jesus was tempted by the devil in the wilderness, he resisted every front. And so Luke says that the devil left him in Luke 4 and verse 13 until an opportune time. One of the anniversaries of September 11th, I was watching the National Geographic Channel, and they were running a documentary called Inside 9/11. Instead of focusing on the events of September 11th, 2001, they looked at the things that led up to the attacks on our country. And the planes being flown into buildings first came into mind 8 years before, when they had tried to bring down the World Trade Center with the car bomb, only then realizing that's not enough firepower. We're going to need more fuel. And so 8 years in the making, they crafted a plan that they could fly fully fueled jets into the World Trade Center. It wasn't like the enemy woke up the week before and said, you know, we need to get the U.S. What can we do to fight them? The first plan didn't work. But they continued to plan. And they attacked. The devil doesn't care how he gets you. It may be like the parable of the sower, that he gobbles you up before the seed even has opportunity to penetrate your heart. He can get you that way. He can get you by causing the sun of persecution or affliction to rise over you before you've grounded yourself good and you just wither away. He can get you that way. He can also get you by causing things to grow in your life that at first just seem insignificant and they're not that big a deal, but eventually they will grow and choke out the word of life. He can get you all at once. He can get you a little at a time, just so long as he gets you away from God. The devil is relentless. Yes, James said, resist the devil and he will flee from you. James 4 and verse 7. But please know, it's only until an opportune time. The devil won't quit. He has nothing to lose but your soul. He is relentless. One final passage in Revelation chapter 17 and verse 14. Having described these great enemies that wage war against the Lamb, it might cause those who read this letter to wonder, well, how can we ever defeat these enemies, this beast with seven horns and crowns and authority and power, this dragon that with a third of his, or with his tail, could swipe away a third of the stars of heaven? How can we win such a battle with such warriors like this? Then we read in Revelation 17 and verse 14, these will wage war against the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, because He is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with Him are the called and chosen and faithful. One of our sisters at Southside has a very unique way of reading a book. Without fail, she likes to read the last chapter first. She said it does two things. Number one, she said it tells me whether or not I want to start from the first and read it all the way through when I know how it ends. But number two, she said, no matter what happens while I'm reading the book, no matter how the plot twists or some circumstances come, I always know how it's going to end, so I can just read it for pleasure and relax. I want you to know the end of the book. These will wage war with the Lamb, but the Lamb will overcome them. It doesn't matter how difficult and humongous our enemy is, the Lamb will overcome them, because He is King of kings and Lord of lords, and those who are with Him will share in His victory. The called, the chosen, the faithful. The question that remains is, whose side are you on? Are you with the Lamb? Or are you with the dragon? Are you fighting with God? Or are you fighting against Him? Hell is prepared for the devil and his angels, and for all those who are disobedient to the will of God. Having seen our enemy and having been assured of his outcome, let's be those who stand on the Lord's side. You know what that will enable you to do? Instead of falling down in despair when some trouble comes, you can fall down in worship like Job did and say, the Lord gives, He has every right to take away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Such an attitude, let us bring Him our broken life. Let's have our final song now, and why don't we stand while we sing.